Well, like with most married couples, my getting ready in the morning routine is significantly different than my wife Tracy's. And one of the main differences is normally when I go into the clothing area in the morning, what I see is the back of her head. She's looking into her closet, and she's just standing there. She's not moving. She's just standing there. And eventually, she'll move, and she'll reach in, and she'll pull something out. She'll put it back. And she'll reach over and pull something else and put it back. She'll pull out a couple of things, hold them up, and put them back. And it just takes her a very long time to find something to wear. Now, please understand, I have been very, very courteous to her here. I am so selfless about this situation that not only do I have my closet, I've taken half of her closet for my clothes as well, so she would have less clothes, and she still can't figure out what to wear. So I've done all I can. But then she goes through this thing where finally she decides on something. She puts it on. I go out of the room. Maybe we're getting ready for church. And so then she comes out of the room, and somehow she's wearing something entirely different. She changed her mind again. So that's how Tracy does clothing in the morning. Well, that's not how I do clothing in the morning. All of my clothes are in rotation. And I've got everything in a strict rotation. Everything is, there's today, and there's whatever's after today. And it's all in a row, and it's all, that's just to pick the next thing. And I don't vary from that very often. But now there are some occasions where it's necessary to change what I'm going to wear. And one of those is when we're going out to eat. Now, most of the time, it doesn't matter. If we're going to Longhorn or if we're going to Jersey Mike's, it really doesn't matter, the T-shirt. But if we're going to Olive Garden or El Zarape, now we have to make a change. Because if what we had was white or pale, I can't wear that to Olive Garden or El Zarape. There's too much red sauce flying around. And there's no way that I'm going to let something get on a pale or white shirt, so I go with a dark shirt. That way, if something gets on it, you can't see it. Because there's just no way. If you go to El Zarape or Olive Garden, it's not just you that you have to worry about. There are people around you who don't know how to eat. And red sauce can fly from table to table, or whoever you're sitting next to, and I can't chance that. And so that's just the way it is. When you wear something like that, you wear something that's light-colored or white, it's very difficult not to get something on it. In an environment like that, if you avoid that, you have to be extremely careful. To avoid getting a stain on a white or light-colored shirt, you must exercise extreme caution. But believe it or not, there's a spiritual application here. 1 Peter is where we're going to be this morning, the book of 1 Peter. So if you would like to turn over there, and we're going to take our text that we're doing now in a series of lessons. And so today we're going to take a lesson out of 1 Peter, where Peter describes what God wants from His people. And just to put it in a phrase, what He wants is people who are pure. What He wants is people who are unstained. What He wants is people who don't have the stain of the world and its corruption on their soul. And so He says things like, be holy, be different, be other than the people around you, or be firm in your faith. Be strong in what you believe and maintain what you believe. Or, He says, abstain from fleshly lust. Right? Don't allow the stain of fleshly lust get onto your soul. Or, in the same place, keep your behavior excellent. Don't do what people in the world do. That's our challenge, is to go into the world wearing the white shirt of Christianity with the devil's marinara flying all around and try to keep the marinara off the white. That's our challenge. And so Peter says in 1 Peter, he warns us about some of the things that we've got to be careful about. The first thing he mentions is our own sinful past. The first thing that we've got to be careful about, because these are things we've already given into. It's obvious that we have a weakness for it because we used to do it. And so he says, be careful about your own sinful past, right? It's like somebody said about what Paul said in Romans 12, present your body a living sacrifice, right? Sometimes we kill the body, lay it on the altar, but it keeps crawling off and going back into sin. And so your own past, our wicked culture, the things around us, entertainment and media and the way people act, the way people dress and the way people talk and all that stuff. We were watching a game yesterday and Tracy just got so frustrated because every single person they showed was saying in frustration the same word, the big one. Every single person, fans, players, coaches, everybody just throwing it out there. And we're around that stuff all the time. I mean, I know the people I work with are potty mouth. The people I work with aren't. People that I know that will remain nameless to protect the guilty. But people that I know talk to me about the people they work with and how they talk, what they say and what they talk about and the language they use. It's around us all the time. And then on top of all of that, Peter says that we have to deal with a hostile society. Our world, don't ever make a mistake about this. Don't ever think that our world is okay with us, right? We finally have begun to realize that. For a long time, we thought they were, because we lived in a Christian nation and everything was in black and white. All the boys were named Beaver and all the dads were named Ward and moms wore pearls when they did housework and everybody behaved. And we thought that the world was okay with us, but it never has been. And it's just starting to manifest itself. The world is hostile to us. So what do we do? How do we handle that? So in 1 Peter, this is a lot of what Peter has to say about that very thing. Now, I'd suggest it would be worthwhile to take 20 minutes at some point today or tomorrow and just pick up 1 Peter and just skim through it. And mark, because you should write in your Bible, and mark every time that it says, here's what you should do to be holy in an unholy culture, and just mark that. You know, you'll run across things like 1 Peter 1:22, fervently love one another from the heart. This helps us to stay pure when we have good relationships. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles in chapter 2. Chapter 3, don't return evil for evil, but give a blessing. Chapter 4, be of sound judgment and sober spirit for the purpose of prayer. Chapter 5, know that you're not alone, that every Christian is experiencing difficulty. It's not just you. All of those things are helpful to us to remain pure. But we're going to take, this morning, we're going to take just one small chunk out of Peter, 1 Peter chapter 1, just a small part of 1 Peter. And here's what we're going to do. Jay has taught us many things over the years. One thing that Jay has taught us is you've got to have a roadmap. And so here's the roadmap for this morning, right? Because we're liable to get lost without one, because there's just so much that we're going to talk about. The first thing we're going to ask ourselves is, what does Peter say about staying holy in a corrupt world? What does it say? This is the first step in Bible study every single time. The first thing we do when we study the Bible is just observe. What does it say? What are the words and what do they mean? That's all. And then secondly, and this is where it gets really crowded, we're going to ask ourselves, how do we obey what Peter said? There's a lot of material in that point right there that's like packed with stuff. And there's a lot. So here's what we're going to do at the end. We're going to come up with a very simple 3-step doable plan that any person can use in order to help themselves remain holy in a corrupting culture. So that's where we're going. It's going to get really crowded and busy, but it'll thin out after a while. And so let's read it first, and then we'll break it down. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 13. 1 Peter 1, 13. Therefore, based on what he said already, therefore, prepare your minds for action. Keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the former lusts which were yours in ignorance, but like the Holy One who called you, be holy yourselves also in all your behavior, because it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy. So the first thing that Peter tells us is, you must work on your attitude. You must work on your attitude. Where holiness begins is the attitude. We cannot start with actions. That comes from attitude. We can't start. Too often in preaching and teaching, we do that. We say, here's what you must do. What we should start with is, here's who you must be. So attitude leads to action. Did you notice in verse 13 what the three attitudes? What are the three things that must happen? Did you see them in verse 13? What three things have to happen inside for you to be holy? Well, number one, you've got to prepare your mind. Number two, you have to keep sober. I'll say it again in a moment. He's not talking about abstaining from alcohol here. He's talking about a spiritual sobriety. We'll get there. And then we must fix our hope on what is coming at the end. And so what he then says is that when you do those things, then you can be obedient, which is what? It's action. You can not be conformed to lust, but you can be holy in behavior. So that's the whole thing. So what we're going to focus on is the three attitudes, right? The attitudes lead to what? The attitudes lead to the action. And that's what we'll try to do this morning. So let's begin with the first one. Prepare your mind. Prepare your mind. Do you ever say or think to yourself, hang on a second, before I do that, I've got to get my head right. Have you ever said that? Or something like it. You ever said that? Before I go there, I've got to get my head straight. You ever said that? Before I go and talk to that person, I got to get my mind right. That's what he's talking about. Now, to just go through daily life and routine, nobody gets up in the morning and says, I got to go brush my teeth, but first I got to get my head right. Nobody does that. It's brushing your teeth. Nobody does that, right? Nobody says, well, some people. My wife says this. My wife says, it's time to go to Walmart, but first, I got to get right in my spirit. That's what my wife says. I say, I need to get right in my spirit, so I'm going to Walmart. That's what I say. But anyway, that's all the thing. But nobody does it about, I've got to walk to the mailbox. Got to get my head right. Nobody does that, right? When do you have to get your head right? When do you have to get settled in your spirit? When do you have to get your mind right? When you're facing something that is a major issue and is potentially challenging. You don't have to get your, most of us, don't have to get our head right for the drive to work, but we might have to get our head right to be at work, right? So maybe you've got to talk with your boss, or you have a conversation with your kids, or you've got, some major project, and you say, well, hang on. Wait, first, I got to get my head right. This is what he means. In order to be holy in an unholy world, we have to prepare ourselves. How do we do that? How do we do that? I'm going to give you two things. And I'm going to use Kaylee. I didn't ask Kaylee if I could use her, But Kaylee is going to quickly learn, being fairly new here, Kaylee, this is what we do. I just pick you and talk about you, and it's all good, so it's okay. So most of you know Kaylee, right? Kaylee and Mac have been with us for a little while. I'm not quite sure about Mac. I'm still in the judgment phase, but Kaylee, wonderful. You know Kaylee, wonderful, right? Sweet, kind, quiet, happy. And one day, Kaylee woke up and said to herself, I'm not going to be a Christian anymore. I'm going to be a lawyer. Now, I don't know what makes a person do that. I'm kidding, of course. I don't know that it happened suddenly one morning. It was probably gradual. No, I'm kidding. I think lawyers are great. Used to work for a thought about being a lawyer. Lawyers are absolutely essential. I love them. I think they're awesome. I'm kidding about that. But Kaylee decided one day she'd be a lawyer. Now, Kaylee, in order to do that, and Kaylee, I think, is third year law school right now. Kaylee, is that right, third year? So Kaylee's third year. So she's been for a while now doing exactly what I'm about to say. So Kaylee at some point said, I am going to be a lawyer. She made that decision. And so looking forward, now Kaylee has made a decision about her life. I am going to be a lawyer. And going forward, every professional and occupational decision has already been made. I'm going to be a lawyer, but for post-grad, I'll go to med school. Well, that's not an option because we already decided to be a lawyer. So what Kaylee did was what we might call a decisive determination. Now, what we're talking about is this. In order to be holy, you have to prepare your mind. How do you do that? Two things. Number one, you make a decisive determination. You make up your mind right now, I am going to be faithful to God in the future. You've already made that decision. You're not getting into situations and going, now what do I do now? Do I do what God said or not? You've made that decision. You see what I'm saying? It's what Joseph had done. When Joseph was tempted by Potiphar's wife, Joseph didn't say, hang on a second, hold that thought, let me decide what I'm going to do. What did he say? I'm not going to do that. When Daniel was confronted with the king's food, Daniel didn't say, give me 30 minutes. Daniel said what? I'm not going to eat it. Why? He'd already made the decisive determination. Jesus in the wilderness. How long did Jesus have to think before he said, I don't think I'll worship you today? How long did he have to think about that? He didn't, because he'd already what? Already made the decisive determination. But that's not all that Kaylee has done. Kaylee did not, some time ago, say, I'm going to be a lawyer and now all that is made. Kaylee, she's third year law. Kaylee, every single day since then, has been doing something. She's been making daily determinations that are moving her toward where she wants to be. Here's how we do that. First of all, consistently studying the Bible. What we're talking about is how we remain pure. What did the psalmist say in Psalm 119 and verse 11? I have hidden your word in my heart that I may not what? Sin against you. So every day we're reading the Bible. Every day we're preparing our minds by reading the Bible. And every day we're preparing for specific challenges. If you're getting up after hitting the snooze button 7 times, with your hair on fire, getting ready in 3 minutes or less because you're late, grabbing a Pop-Tart on the way out the door, which is the first good thing you've done yet, by the way, as long as it's not brown sugar cinnamon, but you grab a Pop-Tart, you rush out the door, and rush into your day. What have you not done? You haven't prepared your mind to face the world. And so you've got to spend time thinking about those specific challenges. That's preparing the mind. Then Peter says, what we need to do is to keep sober. Again, he doesn't mean abstain from alcohol here. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about something spiritual, but we might occasionally use that as an illustration, as we'll do right now. So, what does it mean to keep sober? And how is it done? I'll give you some ideas about what it means to be sober. Number one, it means to be clear-minded. It means to be clear-minded. I think I mentioned this the other day. When I was at Western Kentucky University, a young man came to my room one night. He was having some issues. He was crying. And he wanted to talk. And so he started talking, and he was telling me what was going on. And so I started having a Bible study with him, because that's what he needed. That was his problem. He didn't have God. And so I started having a Bible study with him. But he was totally drunk. Totally drunk. In my room, with me trying to have a Bible study with him. Guess how much good that did? Zero. Because he's drunk. He can't think clearly. And it went nowhere. That's the sort of thing that Peter's getting at, to be clear-minded, to think clearly about what's going on, and to be rightly focused. To be rightly focused. Not giving too much time to things that don't matter rather than things that are important. You will know immediately what's wrong with this picture. What's wrong with that picture? It's distracted driving. You know what's wrong with that picture. Besides the fact they're holding it way up there, Troy, where the police can see it. I mean, at least keep it. No, don't do it at all. But you can see immediately what's wrong with that picture. Right? That this person has something important that they need to be focused on, but they're what? What do we call it? What kind of driving? Distracted. And because they're driving distracted, they're going to do something that's going to cause a tremendous amount of damage. And so their focus is in the wrong place. Peter also means that we need to be spiritually alert. Speaking of driving, what do we call it when you're driving with an awareness of what's going on around you and what might happen, what might go wrong? What do we call that? What kind of driving? Defensive driving, right? Which means what? You're driving and you're aware of what's going on around you so that if something starts to go wrong, you see it ahead of time. And that's what Peter's talking about spiritually. And then accurately discerning. Accurately discerning. This has not always been my strong suit. In many ways, it's still not my strong suit. When Tracy and I were wanting to buy a house, our very first house, in Kentucky, we went with a realtor to see various houses, and they took us to a house in a little town called Midway, Kentucky. It's midway between Frankfort and Lexington, so they called it Midway. We're very creative in Kentucky. And so they took us to see this house in Kentucky, in Midway, and it was an absolute horror. I mean, this house was a complete, the room, the ceilings were way too low. The rooms are very small. All the light switches were on the outside of the room. They were all out in the hallway. And there were no closets in any of the rooms. There were no closets. And so when you thought it couldn't get worse, then they took us downstairs. And so the basement is unfinished. It's muddy. And it's open, like open out into the yard. And so they're showing us this house. And so we leave. And I say to Tracy, you know, I think I could get used to that. I think we can make that work. And she said, you're crazy. She said, the only reason that you are thinking about buying that house is because we've been looking for more than 5 minutes and you just want to buy a house and you are going to make a terrible mistake. And she was right. She was accurately discerning the situation and I was not. And it could have been bad. So that's what Peter says. Now, let's get specific. How is it done? Well, don't fall down the rabbit hole. Don't fall down the rabbit hole. Don't get distracted. When you're using social media, is it ever possible that 5 minutes while I'm waiting on something becomes 3 hours of completely wasted time? Yes, it is. We can't do that in life. We can't fall down the rabbit hole. Secondly, we need to stay with the group. You remember when you were in elementary school, and they took you on a field trip to the museum. And they had rules, right? You know, bring money for lunch, bring money for the gift shop, you know, don't bring a weapon, that sort of thing. Part of my childhood, I was in Louisville. That had to be part of the thing. But one of the rules was stay with the group, right? That was one of the rules. Stay with the group. Don't wander off. If we want to keep sober, we have to stay with the group. We have to stay closely connected to the church because that's where so much encouragement and help is. We have to give ourselves some space. We've got to allow ourselves some time to reflect and think about where we are and what's going on. And listen, we need to remember how it ends. We need to remember how it ends. If you want to keep sober, just spend some time every day thinking about the judgment. And that is designed to keep us thinking sober. And then the final thing that Peter says is to fix your hope. And what he's talking about is fixing our hope on the second coming. Now, here in the South, we do a couple of different things with fix, right? You know this. Here in the South, we don't prepare to do something. You're not preparing to do something. You're not about to do something. What are you? You're fixing to do it. Or, if you're really country, you're fitting to do it, right? So that's what that, we're fixing to do it. In the South, fixing to do it means it hasn't got done yet. It's still up in the air, right? But in real estate law, the word fixture has a specific meaning. In real estate law, if I sell my house, I can take out of that house anything I want to take unless it's a fixture. Now, what is a fixture? A fixture is something, basically, that you can't remove without doing damage. You can't take the sconces off the wall. You can't take the faucet out of the kitchen, that sort of thing. If it is a fixture, it doesn't come off. It doesn't move. If it's a fixture, that's where it stays. That's what he means. He doesn't say y'all need to be fixing to fix your hope. He says, fix your hope. Attach it. Bolt it in with one of those things on the back side of the drywall that goes out like that and sticks on the drywall so it won't come out. Fix it on there. Glue it on there so it doesn't come off. That's what he's talking about. Fix your hope. How do we do that? A couple of things. We'll give the plan, we'll be done. You got to know the truth about your future. You have to know what God says about the end of time and about heaven. If you don't really understand heaven, you're one of those people who thinks that heaven is about getting a chunk of gold off a street, or heaven is about we don't do anything, we just sit around all the time. If that's your idea of heaven, there's no motivation in that. None. Right? I for the longest time, and I still grieve to this day. I still grieve today. The years that I spent in vanity and pride, not knowing the truth about broccoli casserole. I didn't know. All I heard was broccoli. And my mother would say, don't you want to try some broccoli casserole? I didn't get past the eye. All I heard was broccoli. I didn't understand the truth about broccoli casserole until one day. I don't know how it happened, but one day I decided to try broccoli casserole. I understood at that point. It ain't about the broccoli. It's about the cheese, and the mushroom soup, the butter, and the crackers. Anything else at all? Is there something else? That's it. That's what it's about. And ever since then, people say if you had one meal, last meal before you die, what would it be? Fried pork chops, mashed potatoes, milk gravy, broccoli casserole, and chocolate pudding. That's my meal. Broccoli casserole. Think about that. Broccoli casserole. All those years I didn't get it. And so I wasn't motivated to have it. But now I do. I'm motivated too much to have it. Ask God to help you what He has said. When you're reading the Bible about heaven, ask God to help you understand it. And then spend some time thinking about eternity. Spend some time dwelling on heaven. Associate with eternity-minded people. hang around people who are not living for this world, but for the next. And take the long view when making decisions. Don't make decisions for today. Make decisions for after you're gone and what will be true then. Now, what all of that means is this, to put that simply, Bible study, prayer, meditation, fellowship, and obedience. That's it. And I have to tell you that after yesterday, I feel a lot better about what I just said. Because that's my go-to. That there on the left is my go-to. When people say to me, or people don't usually ask me, I just tell them because that's my job. But well, how do I grow? How do I become more spiritual? How do I, whatever it is spiritually, that's the answer. Well, sometimes I sort of think, maybe that's all right. So yesterday I was talking to Craig Hearn, right? So those of you who don't know, Craig preaches at, in New Bern. Talking to Craig. Craig said, the church wanted a series on how come we're not growing, what do we do about it? He said, so I told them, we have to start in here, I have to start with us. And he said, what is that? How do we do that? And so I thought, oh no. What if he says it's something other than what I always say? What is he going to say? How do you agree? You know what he said? Literally, put his hand out, started putting his fingers out. Bible study, prayer, meditation, fellowship. I kissed him on the cheek. I didn't really. He's got a real hairy, scruffy cheek. I didn't really do that. But I have to tell you that today, I feel even better about that than I used to. Because I always thought that was right. But Craig Hearn said it's right. Now I know it's right. Right? Where two or three agree, right? So the Bible says. So that's what we do in order to fix our hope. So you can take your songbook out. We're going to sing that song in just a minute. Just tell you what's coming, give you the plan, and we're done. To next week, Lord willing, next week, continuing the series, Philippians 2, 14 to 16. Philippians 2, 14 to 16. Shining in darkness. Shining in darkness. I think that you will be surprised what Paul says will make you shine brightly. It's not what you think. It's very interesting what he says. Tonight, Lord willing, now usually on this Sunday night we have our singing. Don't have that tonight. Jane Carroll not able to be here. So we're not having that tonight. That will be next week, Jay, is that correct? But tonight, so tonight, we'll be here at the building in Philippians 1, and we're going to be talking about how you, yes, you can rejoice even when your life stinks. So, if your life never stinks, stay home. There's nothing I can tell you that you need. But if your life ever stinks, even a little, then I hope you'll come back tonight and we'll talk about that from Philippians 1. Here's what we've been talking about. Attitudes lead to actions. Attitudes lead to obedience. Attitudes lead to being the kind of people that God wants us to be. So how do we actually do that? Well, first of all, we commit in advance to holiness. We commit in advance to holiness. If you haven't done that, you can do it today. You can say right now, from now on, I'm faithful. I'm living holy. You can do that right now. But you also have to do it every morning. Work in 30 seconds in the morning to just take a minute and say, today I'm going to make it happen. Stay spiritually grounded and focused, right? You have to stay focused on what's real and then live with eternity in mind. Well, that's not much of a plan because it's not very specific, so I'll give you specific. Number one, compose, post, and I don't mean on Facebook. You can. I mean at home. Compose, post, and read daily your commitment to holiness. Make a commitment to holiness and say, this is what I commit to in my relationship with God. Write it down, stick it up somewhere so that you'll read it every day. Now, after a week, you're going to have to move it because it's going to blend in. You're going to have to put it somewhere else. But that's okay. So, compose it, post it, and read it. Secondly, create a daily spiritual routine that promotes your holiness. Every single day, have a prayer time. Have a read a Bible verse time. Have a whatever it is. But create a spiritual routine. And then cultivate a relationship with an eternity-minded believer. Find one other believer that you really feel like lives for eternity. And just get around them a little bit more. Just talk to them a little bit more. I would suggest to you that what that asked of you is literally something that I don't know anybody that can't do that. I don't know anybody. It's very simple, right? And so this is something that any of us can do, and I hope that you'll think about doing that. Well, you are, as a Christian, you are wearing a white spiritual shirt. As a Christian, you're wearing not just a shirt, you're wearing a whole suit. You're wearing a white spiritual suit from head to toe. But you live in a mud-slinging world. You live in a world that is constantly trying and working to get you to sin. And most of the time, it's just, they don't mean to. Sometimes they do. Many of you remember Ramon Perez, who used to go to church here, he and his family. Ramon was some sort of, he was in the Marines, he was some sort of a commanding officer of some kind. And he said that his men and women under him, told him more than once, our goal, while we are working under you, our goal is to get you to say a cuss word, just one cuss word. We're working. We're working. We want you to cuss. That's our goal. I asked him if he ever did. He said no. But he wasn't looking at me when he said it. So I don't know about that. But sometimes they try to do it, right? Sometimes they try to get us to sin. Sometimes. Isaiah was telling me the other day, not somebody he works with, but somebody who comes to where he works, was actively trying to get him to do something he shouldn't do, like asking him to do it, trying to convince him to do it. That happens. The world is trying to get mud all over us. But we're wearing the white suit. What do? Well, there's no option. Just stay inside. Just stay inside. Don't go out there. You can't do that. Right? The only option is to be intentional about working the plan. So we're going to sing this song in just a moment. And as we do that, it's an opportunity for all of us to really think about where we are. Maybe you're not even a Christian. Maybe you're not a Christian. You haven't even started living in a relationship with God. You're still part of that worldliness and sin and all of that. You want to get rid of that. We'd love to talk to you about how to do that. If you are a Christian and you see what we've said, you can do what we've said, but you really feel like you need personal help. You need somebody to talk to, somebody to give you advice, somebody to study with you. Listen, got a room full of them. We'll help you. We just need to know what you need. So if this morning there's some way that we can help you, please let us know. You can talk to us after church or come forward as we stand and sing the song.